Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Hope springs eternal, Richard and Ezra, as the NHL, the 2015-16 season, gets underway in four different venues this evening. And for all 30 teams in the NHL, hope springs eternal. By the end of tonight, for a lot of those teams, hope won't spring eternal anymore. But at least it's a nice feeling to start with puck drop.
Well, it's a great time to be a sports fan right now, Drew. I mean, you're talking about NHL starting, baseball playoffs, NFL, NBA getting going here, coming through town here. So, I mean, yeah. you can't beat this time as a sports fan.
Well, you got the Jays. Of course, we're going to have the Jays game on Friday. And we'll have updates throughout the Jays game tomorrow as they get underway against the Rangers in the first best of five of the ALDS. So much going on. The Jets, of course, in action tomorrow and Friday. Then they get the weekend off. And then Monday and Tuesday, of course, we're going to be joined later on in the show tonight by Jack Edwards, Boston Bruins play-by-play broadcaster. And, of course, we're also going to be joined by Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils analyst. Shane Knight is going to join us off the top here in a couple minutes to talk about the Jets as we get underway in the 2015-16 season. So much to talk about with this Winnipeg Jets team now that training camp is over and we head into the start of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And really going into this season, it's a lot different than in previous seasons, guys, because it's not whether the Jets are going to finally take that next step and make the playoffs. It's are they going to be able to stay as a playoff team? And I think we'd all agree that this year it's getting younger, the mantra of the Winnipeg Jets. This is one of the youngest teams in the NHL. I believe James Myrtle just came out with his stats, and the Jets are the fourth youngest team in the NHL. So it's all about the Knicks and, you know, The Jets weren't a very old team last year either, Drew, so there's a lot of questions. We know that there's probably less questions when it comes to goaltending and defense, but it's mainly those forward groups and the bottom six forwards. Where does everybody slot in? We see Nikolaj Ehlers playing on the second line and Drew Stafford dropping down to the third line. So really it's going to be a lot about how these young players, Richie, are able to step in and really grow as a team and grow early. And, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers, Nick Petan, these are two high draft picks and the sky's the limit. But, you know, we know there's going to be some growing pains. But really this year it's going to be about how quickly those guys are able to mesh with this group.
You know, it's all about the young players right now and they're going to be a key. But, and, you know, at the end of the day, I still think it comes down to goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the young guys are getting all the attention. I think goaltending still will be the key. And if they're able to get a similar season, the Jets, from Andre Pavlik, and also from Drew, you know,
Michael Hutchinson.
That
yeah,
baseball
not Drew
mind.
Hutchinson, but Michael Hutchinson. Brain.
Yeah, exactly. Michael Hutchinson. I mean, that's important as well.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program, joining us from Boston, where he traveled with the Jets earlier today. He's the Winnipeg Jets analyst. You see him on TSN3. You hear him on this fine radio station. Shane, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you this evening?
Doing very well, thank you. Start of the new hockey season here, so everything's bright and sunny, even if it might be a little gray and rainy here back in the Peg. But I'm sure everyone's excited for puck drop getting underway in four different venues later on this evening. And then tomorrow, the big game between the Jets and the Bruins to start the year down in Boston.
Well, it really is exciting, especially, you know, from the players' point of view. You know, being in that situation, you know, you get into camp, you know what you're going to go through. It's very tiresome, but it's one of those things that needs to be done in the preseason, the same thing. And, you know, especially as a veteran player, maybe a little more exciting when you're a rookie or you're trying to solidify a spot. But for the veterans, it's all about getting to the regular season, getting to the ones that matter. And, you know, that's the exciting time of the year to get out of that gate and hopefully start the season on the right foot.
You mentioned the rookies, and of course the Jets are bringing three rookies into the lineup to start the year, Petan, Kopp, and Ehlers. I'm going to include, and they're bringing back Alex Burmistrov, who's been gone for a couple years. You know, you've been in plenty of NHL dressing rooms. You know, what's it like when a dressing room gets sort of an influx of youth with these four young players coming in, especially after a season in which the team qualified for the playoffs and are trending upwards?
Well, I think it's good to get it after a season like that because expectations are higher. Standards are set, and it's easier for young players to come in, you know, hopefully to a winning dressing room, to a winning attitude where, you know, we saw what the Jets did last year in their game prep and how they got themselves ready for games. That was a big improvement last year, you know, outside wins and losses, which is all that matters. But the way they prepared themselves, how they started games improved so much for the Winnipeg Jets last year. You know, and that goes to the dressing room. There's something that happens in there. So for the young players, yeah, it's good to have them in. Yeah, I think they're going to be quiet to start off before their personalities really show. They'll develop through the year because, you know, there are some nerves that go when you're in a dressing room to begin with. But I think, you know, at the same time, it can bring a little bit of energy. We know what these players are like. You know, there's some exciting young players, especially when we talk Patan and Ehlers. You know, what they can do. I think Kopp, you know, he's got a good friend in Trouba, so it's a lot easier for him maybe to come into a room like that. But you know what? It's all good, I think, on both sides of it. It's always good to have those young guys that, you know what, sometimes are, when you're down as a veteran player, there's young guys that are just energized and happy to be there, and you can feed off that.
You know, Shane, thinking back and looking back in your career, you played on looking at the team, 2000-2001 Ottawa Senators, an exceptionally talented team and pretty young team. I mean, you on the team, you were a young guy as well, but you look at some of the guys they brought in, you know, Marian Hossa was 21 and Marty Havlat was 19. So guys similar ages to, say, Ehlers and Patan. How did those guys, how was the transition for them throughout the season?
You know what, and I remember Marty Havlat because we were both rookies, and Marian Hossa too. You know, we're talking about two exceptional players. Mm-hmm. Marty Havlat was one of the best 19-year-olds I've ever seen. He was, and it was hard to get a grasp because he didn't know English. So I couldn't tell you much outside that. He came over. He looked like the guy that bagged your groceries at the store as a 19-year-old. He was skinny and whatever, but man, was he an incredible 19-year-old. So slick with the puck. He could, you know, slide down the wall. You know what? He reminds me kind of a lot like Nikolai Ehlers. He wasn't mm-hmm. a big guy, but he had skill. He had speed. And it was about finding your way. And I think that's what Ehlers got to do. There's a quickness to the game. And when we talk about quickness, we're not talking about the speed. It's about knowing when guys closing on you, knowing the space that you can take, when you need to make that play, when you don't, when you need to move your feet, when you can slow down, how to find the holes, when to stop and start. All those little things are going to be the quickness factors that Ehlers and Patan and Kopp are going to have to adjust to. So, yeah, I remember, and Hossa was, you know, I've always said I played with him 6 straight years, 4 in Ottawa, 2 in Atlanta. Probably the best two-way guy I've ever played with, along with Bergeron.
Shane, Dustin Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd are obviously still without contract extensions, and Andrew Ladd said today that he wasn't going to talk about the contract situation at all. In your opinion, do you think this is going to be a distraction for the Winnipeg Jets at all this year?
Not right now. I don't believe it is a distraction right now at all. And, I remember going situation guys like that. But the longer it drags out, yes, I believe it will become one. But right now, there's too much excitement of starting the season. There's too much focus on coming out of the gate right, getting into the games. Everybody's excited. They're excited to be on the road. This is the first road trip. So, you know, I know the players. Everyone's excited to get away, go out, have some dinner, bond, be with the guys. So right now it isn't, but as it goes along, and when does that start to become a distraction? I'm not sure. And, you know, maybe 2-3 weeks. And again, how they start the season might play into that. If they start here 0-4, well, I think it obviously would come a distraction a little bit quicker. So, but if they're winning, you know what? You're not really worried about it. I think Andrew Ladd knows at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, is he worried about getting paid? No, he knows he's going to get paid. It's just a matter of where, and right now he hopes it's the Winnipeg Jets.
You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Our guest is Winnipeg Jets analyst Shane Knighty as we begin our comprehensive Jets preview to start the 2015-16 NHL season. Shane, a lot has been made in the last sort of 48 hours, maybe not a lot, but some has been made in the last 48 hours about Paul Maurice's comments that he expects Adam Lowry and that line to play more minutes this season than they did in last year. And conversely, I guess that means that sort of the Scheifele, Perreault, and Ehlers line might play fewer minutes to start the year. You know, do you think that's not a problem, of course. I mean, having that many talented players is always a good thing. But, you know, what are your thoughts? Is Adam Lowry ready to take sort of that step forward and maybe be a second-line center if you want to rank them 1-2-3 as opposed to sort of that third-line role he played last season?
Well, and it's interesting when you hear people rank, you know, the lines and where they fit. Obviously, you go by minutes, right? And I think they're going to be very close. I think the little line's obviously going to lead in the minutes played. Adam Lowry, I think this is going to be his role, and it is time to put him in there. Maybe it's a little bit early, but that is the option they have, the only option, I believe. I don't think Scheifele's ready for that. I think Scheifele, you want to get him away from those lines. So to do that, you got to put him in that third spot coming off the bench. So your first, you know, probably Little or Lowry, depending on where you are if you're a coach rolling lines. And Paul Maurice referenced this. I think I talked about it the other day. I can't remember which show. He mentioned, but he talked about Chicago there, that Patrick Kane, if you charted the lines in playoffs, he came out in the third position. And he said, you know, I wouldn't consider him a third line player, but that's the line change he came out because they had Kruger checking and they had Taves line. So that allows those guys, the Scheifele, Ehlers, Perreault, you're going to get a little more room. You might get that last pair of D. So that frees up some space. So if Lowry can play in this position along with Stafford and Burmistrov, and if they can have success, you know, being another one of those top shutdown lines, because that is what Adam Lowry is going to be. Mm-hmm. So you might as well play him, get into that. He is going to develop into that. I really believe that. I think his skills, his smarts play to that role. Yeah, there's going to be some bumps. But why not start now? And then that frees a little bit more room for that third line, or let's just call it Scheifele's line instead of the third.
Shane, do you think Nikolaj Ehlers is going to be a right winger or left winger?
I think he's going to be a right winger. At least that's where they're going to start. And again, it's so hard to predict with these young players, but I think on the right side, I like the way he moves better there. And he's good at coming off that wing. He sees the ice a little better, and it's interesting. It's like defense. We always get a big misconception that, you know, somebody's got to play the offside. But, you know, Charlie Huddy, a guy who made a living playing on the right side as a left-handed shot with Paul Coffey, said once you learn it, it is actually easier to play the offside. And I think that goes along with the wings. When you got a guy that's really comfortable with it, to them it's easier. There's some advantages to it. There's going to be some disadvantages. What they're comfortable with. And I like the way Ehlers skates down that side, the way he can shoot off that wing. We'll see how he loves to cut to the middle. It's much easier to do it coming down the right side as a left-hand shot, as long as he has his head up.
Shane, there was a lot of talk heading into training camp and the preseason about Jacob Trouba's ice time and Jacob Trouba possibly playing with another defenseman, not Mark Stewart, maybe Dustin Byfuglien, but then, of course, you get into the problem with having two right-handed shots. Do you see Jacob Trouba staying with Mark Stewart for the majority of the season, at least the beginning part of the season?
I see the beginning. I see the beginning part of the season. I see them going with that six. I like what Ben Sherratt did. So now all of a sudden you got a guy that, you know, you thought was to stay at home, but he showed some offensive, you know, flair. It is preseason, but Sherratt's got a lot more confidence. What I see happening, and we saw Sherratt on the right side in preseason. So I think it's going to play to what type of game they're in. Are they chasing a game? Are they trying to shut a game down? I think we will see Trouba, who has said he can play the left side. In certain circumstances, Paul Maurice is going to have that ability. If he needs to pump the minutes or whatever, you see Trouba move up on the left side with Dustin Byfuglien, and Sherratt would move back to the right with Mark Stewart. I don't know when we'll see it, if we'll see it, but I think that might be the line of thinking they have here heading into the season. They'll start with the six as they are, you know, the Stewart, Trouba, Sherratt, Buff, Myers, Enstrom. But if they're chasing a game in particular, I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, kind of move Trouba up there or even go to a five-man rotation with Sherratt because of what he did.
Shane, Nick Petan made the team out of training camp. I think it was a bit of a surprise for a lot of people. Most people sort of, before training camp, had him penciled in to a role, probably more with the Manitoba Moose, give him a year of professional hockey under his belt. You know, what are your expectations for Nick Petan sort of in that, at least right now, fourth-line role or playing on the left side of Andrew Copp to start the season?
Well, you know what? I don't know if I'm the right guy to ask because I thought this was a good kid that would make the team. I've liked him since I first saw him in Penticton, and probably the reason why, and yes, you know what, everybody's like to develop, but there's a part of Nick Petan's game that doesn't need to be developed, and that's the hardest one to learn, and that's the smarts. You know what, he thinks the game already at this level. He's going to have to learn a little bit more. He's going to have to, similar to what I said about Ehlers, what he can get away with, that quickness part. I don't know what my expectations are. I expect him to to do well. I love him on the power play. He plays that pop out. I think he's fantastic. Adds a real good element to another unit out there because of what he does. He passes the puck so well. And, you know, coming from Andrew Ladd, I asked him one day, and I actually asked him if I could say it, and he says, you know, he says, the thing about, he says, I've seen one other guy pass the puck like Nick Batan, he says, and that's Patrick Kane. And he says, I'm not saying that lightly. So for a guy that's on the ice with him to say that, you know, that speaks pretty highly. There are some things that are going to have to develop from Batan. Do we see him stay on that fourth line? I like him there, but I think he's a guy that you can just use in so many different areas. And that just, you know, goes to show, we've talked about the league's change. It's changed a ton since I played. You wouldn't see a guy like that on the fourth line, but that's a huge luxury to have as a coach, a guy you can move around the lineup, play in the power play, play, you know, in the 3-on-3 situations at the end of the game when you're running your top two lines. You got a fresh, skilled guy coming out into overtime. So I have big expectations for him, but I always have. I've really liked his game since I first saw him.
You know, Shane, Paul Maurice did a great job last year. I don't think there's really any question about that, but to me, the team's complexion has kind of changed. You know, they're kind of that big, fast, physical team. This year, they're a little bit smaller and more skilled. How do you see Paul Maurice adjusting to the roster?
Well, from what he said, he's going to adjust. There's going to be he's got different tools to use, but they're still going to play Jets hockey, if you want to word it that way. And that means he wants the same compete, the systems. You're still going to have to play a certain way to be part of his team. But at the same time, they're going to have a little more skill in the lineup. And it's funny, you talk about teams adjusting, and I remember, you can go back, it's funny how teams try, I don't know if they try, but whoever wins the cup that year tries to, you know, they try to emulate it. Like the Bruins won the cup, the Kings won the cup, so like, oh, you got to have the big, tough, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, Chicago slips in there a few times and wins. They got a little bit of mix. They got that skill to their team. And, you know, now it's like everybody's trying to find that combo, and you're seeing these young guys come into lineups and play big roles early. So, you know, I like what they're doing here. Is it going to work right away? I'm not sure, but I really like the direction that the Jets are heading.
Shane, we'll let you go on this last question. If you look at most prognostications at the start of the year, the Jets, for a lot of people, are on the playoff, on the outside of the playoffs looking in. You know, if you had to pinpoint one factor more than any other, what would that one factor be that would make the Jets a playoff team versus not a playoff team at the conclusion of the 15-16 regular season?
What will make them a play? You know what, to me, and I think this is a big thing, and everybody's going to say goaltending, and I'm sure you guys have probably discussed it or will discuss it. That's going to be an element. But for me, I think the defense here of the Winnipeg Jets has to be a key. You've got some young guys up front, but you look at that, you look at the top six of these, like, yeah, Mark Stewart, I obviously I love him, he's my D partner here in Boston, but him and Truba, that's a pretty solid 5-6. What Ben Schrod has taken his strides with Bufflin, and then Enstrom and Myers, this is a real good puck moving. I expect Myers to have a great year. Bufflin, the size, the way they can move the puck, I think the defense has to really be a big part this year, because their ability not only to chip in offensively, you got four or five guys that can really jump in if Sherratt continues to evolve as we've seen, and then still have that defensive element that can cover up a lot for, you know, these young guys as they learn their way. But for me, it's how this defense unit plays throughout the year and stay healthy, I guess, would be another one you want to throw in there.
Shane Knighty is a Jets analyst on TSN3 and here on TSN 1290. Shane, appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to enjoying Boston nightlife, and appreciate your time this evening here on TSN 1290.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good night.
You too, Shane.
We'll all enjoy the game tomorrow.
Thanks very much, buddy. It's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Here goes Scheifele. Got some help from Enstrom, and he flips it out towards center ice. Frolik steals a butt. He's got a breakaway. Frolik moves in, shoots. What a stop. Rebound. They score!
Fourth of the night!
Matthew Perreault!
Matthew Perreault's career night last season at MTS Center. We recall that. Michael Frolik won't be involved in any goals for the Jets this coming year, though.
That's true. I gotta say, great job by Shane there, but we're fortunate. You know, I know Brian Engvall moved on to Tampa Bay, but Brian and Shane were
tremendous analysts.
Really good on, yeah, I think we sometimes take that for granted. You know, people are used to complaining about their analysts,
mm-hmm.
or us, understandably. but
us, they can complain about all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, no, but he does a real good job, so that was a good spot there.
Yeah. Should mention this segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Spend some time talking about the Jets breaking down by the forward group, the defense, the goaltending, etc. Start with the forwards, you know. The big surprise, I think, to me, and it became apparent, it seemed like it was becoming apparent as training camp finished, is that Nick Petan made this team. That's my big surprise. Yep. And, you know, is he ready? Is he not ready? I guess time will tell as we enter into the season. But, you know, having spent the last number of years watching fourth lines that really didn't have much talent, couldn't score, didn't have much offensive mm-hmm. capabilities, you know, were limited to 4 or 5 minutes of ice time max last season on a lot of different nights. It's nice to see a player with skill and the Jets' fourth line turning into from one more of a liability to one that, you know, is going to be expected to get some offensive numbers behind it as well.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, Drew, is that it was, you know, attributed to the lack of the flow of the young talent. And I mean, certainly that's one of the factors of why there is a different kind of complexion to the fourth line. But the Jets could have gone out and signed guys to play those roles last year and years before. They just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided to employ these kind of fighter-esque players or guys who were limited in terms of their talent. So I'm happy to see that they're kind of changing, because in reality, most teams are changing that way.
Yeah.
Petan, you know, Shane talked about it, was a smart player, exceptional vision, really good passer, really good in the power play. The biggest thing I've always wondered about him is how he adjusts to the 5-on-5 game. It's not that he's not tough, but he's not the biggest guy, and he's not the fastest guy in the world. That doesn't mean he's a bad skater, but when you're smaller, you know, sometimes they expect you to be just dynamite.
Yeah, to avoid getting hit.
Yeah, so I mean, that doesn't mean you can't improve it, but that's what I'm interested to see. But he's certainly smart enough to get around. When he has open ice, he's very dangerous. So I was surprised that he made the team insofar as also based upon the fact that the team was, you know, draft develop, and you expected the guy to play in the minors. Having said that, he played 2 years in junior, which I think was a good use of those, not using him in an entry-level deal and giving him a shot. And if he does struggle, as he probably will be back in Manitoba, but if they give an ample opportunity, the one thing is, and as you want to get your take on this, I mean, Andrew Kopp's a very responsible center, two-way, and Chris Thorburn is Chris Thorburn. We know what he does. So unless he's playing on other players or on the second power play, it's going to be tough for him to utilize those skills if he's not playing with guys who can complement him.
Sure.
Richie, you mentioned how does Nick Petan adjust to the 5-on-5 game, and for me, it's how do the rookies Nikolai Ehlers and Nick Petan both adjust to different roles than they played in junior. So you had Nick Petan playing mm-hmm. on the first line for mm-hmm. the last 3 years with the Portland Winterhawks back in the day with Brendan Leipzig and Ty Ratty, and then you had Nikolai Ehlers playing with Jonathan Drouin and other players on the first line of the Halifax Mooseheads. So now both of these players are going to be asked to play different roles and different positions. So Nikolai Ehlers is a left winger. He's going to be asked to play right wing. Mm-hmm. Nick Petan is a center. He's going to be asked to play left wing. So how do they adjust, and how quickly do they adjust? Because I don't think either of these players are only going to be around for 9 games. I think what we saw in training camp was that these were the two best options for the Jets, along with Andrew Kopp.
Sure.
And Thomas Raffel was also offered a contract, but he'll start the season with the Manitoba Moose. So to me, that's going to be the big key as far as the Winnipeg Jets forwards go. You know what you're going to get out of Andrew Ladd. You know what you're going to get out of Blake Wheeler and Brian Little mm-hmm. and Matthew Perreault yeah. and Drew Stafford. And I don't think it's surprising at all that you see Drew Stafford play on the third line and you have Nikolai Ehlers go up to the second line, because Paul Maurice is looking at that second line and he sees Mark Scheifele and he sees Nikolai Ehlers and then he sees other players and he has no problem moving Drew Stafford up to the second line if he needs to. He has no problem moving Nikolaj Ehlers down to the third line and vice versa. As Shane said last segment, you might see Nick Petan play on the third line. You might even see him move up to the second line, and that's because he has a lot of talent. And you have to think that those three players, Nikolaj Ehlers, Nick Petan, and Alexander Burmistrov, are going to make up for the flexibility and the versatility that a player like Michael Frolik offered.
Well, I still think the team is short one veteran forward. I will stick by that, especially in the case of an injury. I think they're really going to be depleted.
Well, it looks like your first call-up is Thomas Raffel.
I appreciate that, but
I agree with you.
I think there should have been one extra forward here. I'm going to stick by that, and that doesn't mean I don't think the young players are good enough. I just think in terms of the structure of their organization would have been beneficial. In any event, another thing, as you know, mentioned Petan possibly playing on the third line. Well, I don't know. I mean, Alex Burmistrov didn't impress me overly much in the preseason. I know as you saw, watch more games than I did. But when I saw him, I wasn't very impressed. And, you know, depending on how he plays and the situation, defense, offense, I mean, Nick Petan may pass him by on the depth chart. It will depend, but I'm not overly convinced he is a changed player. I mean, they talk about his shot. I'd have to see him play more and to determine if it's improved. I know it was weak before that, but the guy's not going to go over to the KHL for 2 years and completely change his game and turn into Pavel Bure.
You generally don't go to the KHL, come back to the NHL with improved habits. The KHL allows for a lot more freelancing, so it will be interesting to see, you know, in you know, legitimate game situations, who Alex Burmistrov is.
Absolutely.
You know, what kind of player has he become? You mentioned Thomas Raffel. He obviously signs the one-year, one-way contract. He'll start with the Moose. Yep. You know, we'll likely see him up with the Jets at some point in time during the course of the season. And you know, one issue that nobody's really talking about jumped out to me. You know, Jim Slater was proficient in the faceoff circle, and obviously, you know, with him not being in the lineup anymore, that's a big area the Jets are going to lose out on. Because you know, Slater was one of the best in the NHL. If I'm not mistaken, top 10 on the faceoffs in the NHL. Brian Little was second best among those who take regular faceoffs for this team, but he was sub 50%. So that is an area that I think that the Jets are going to struggle in for a little while in the course of the season until, you know, maybe, you know, Adam Lowry or Mark Scheifele really improve on their faceoff skills.
You're young up the middle. Kopp, Scheifele, Lowry. Okay, Little's he's a veteran now, but those three guys are young, and it takes a while to learn how to take faceoffs in the National Hockey League. Very few young players at those ages are exceptionally proficient in that area. So that's a concern. I would agree with that, Drew. If your best faceoff guy is under 50%, you got a problem. And, you know, Bob McKenzie wrote about it today, and that was a good point. You know, 3-on-3, especially, faceoffs are going to be imperative because you need
possession.
The puck.
Yeah, and faceoffs are probably the most important in the playoffs, but they're important. Why? Because you're talking about puck possession. And one of the biggest differences between last year's Jets team, and the team from the previous 3 years is that this team was a better puck possession team. So you're talking, I think they were 10th. Or top 15 in the NHL in puck possession, and that was helped a lot by the addition of Tyler Myers. But you're talking about a team that took that next step. And, you know, as far as the faceoffs go, Jim Slater, I think you lose out on faceoffs, but that's something that the Jets know they have to be better at, and I expect them to be better in that area this year.
Something worth watching for, at least as the season begins.
Yeah, and it's important. I think one of the big reasons that the team succeeds in their possession, as he refers to, is that defense is mobile and able to carry the puck. And Shane talked about the importance of that, but there are guys on the back end, four guys in particular, and Sherrod really has done a nice job here. I mean, Stewart's not a puck handler, but the other four guys, top guys, are really good with the puck, and Sherrod's proved to be pretty adept with the puck so far.
Yeah, Nikolaj Ehlers, Richie, and Nick Petan aren't going to hurt with that.
That's right.
These are skilled players. As Shane mentioned when we had him on last segment, Nick Petan is a guy that can quarterback the power play and did so in the WHL, and he'll get probably second power play time, maybe even first power play time. So I assume that the Jets are still going to be a top 10, top 15 possession team, and that the faceoffs will come. I mean, certain teams are just certain players, Rich, in the NHL are just better at faceoffs. I mean, the Manny Malhotras, the Ryan Kesslers, the Ryan Getzlaffs. I mean, these guys, they're just, it's a skill, just like having speed and hockey intelligence is a skill. And Adam Lowry, for example, and Mark Scheifele, those are two players that they're just going to have to hope that they win more faceoffs, work on techniques, with the coaching staff, and you know, that's something that being young players, they have a lot of time to learn that.
I'd rather my guys need to improve at faceoffs than speed or
yeah, than skill. Yeah. You're right. I mean, it's a good problem to have in the course of the problems. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Jets' defense as we enter the 2015-16 season. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Spurgeon, put it back toward the line. Intercepted by Bufflin. He's got a partial break on a 2-on-1. Bufflin with Wheeler. Bufflin moves in, shoots, scores!
Dustin Bufflin scoring for the Winnipeg Jets last season. Welcome back to our comprehensive Winnipeg Jets preview here on TSN 1290. The season premiere as well of NHL This Week. We're going to be with you all week, all season long. Sometimes it's going to be Wednesdays. Some days it's going to be Tuesdays. Some days it might even be Thursdays. Stay tuned to our Twitter feed, @IllegalCurve. You'll hear updates on the station as well, telling you when the show is going to be on. Should mention this segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Jets have decided to carry 8 defensemen as they start the 2015-16 season. Jay Harrison, the odd man out, he gets sent down to the Manitoba Moose. He clears waivers. Are you surprised he cleared waivers?
No.
No? You just didn't see? Is he yet?
No. Him and her party, I didn't think either player was going to get claimed, so I thought this was a little bit overanalyzed.
Okay. So you're saying you don't want to continue to analyze it then?
Well, I mean, Drew, at the end of the day, with respect to Jay Harrison, who's really an opportunity to meet him, a really good guy and well-respected in the room, but there's players with more talent available on waivers or free agency. And he's built that reliable kind of game and defensive style and all that stuff, big guy. He's carved out a nice career for himself, but I didn't think any of these guys were going to be claimed. Him or Party was going to be claimed.
Did you think Postman was going to get claimed?
I don't know if I thought he'd get claimed. There was a possibility, but they gave him a 2-year deal, so I didn't think they were going to waive him.
Do you think they still see something in Paul Postman?
I mean, Anthony Peluso wouldn't have got claimed.
Yeah.
Right? I think at the end of the day, this team is not going to be... This team's success is not... I know last year a lot of injuries, but this team's success most likely will not be based on Jay Harrison, Adam Party, Paul Postma, who they really haven't trusted in years, and Thomas Raffel and Like those, it's going to be on the guys we were talking about before.
The guys who you knew, yeah. who you knew something about. So let's talk about the guys we know something about. Enstrom and Myers, Sherratt and Bufflin, Stewart and Trouba. Is that how you would deploy the defense, Ezzy?
Well, yeah, we had just asked Shane Knighty about that. And Jacob Trouba, I think, is the most talented defenseman on this team. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that, or at the very least would say that he's the second or third most talented defenseman on this team. And I think this year you're going to see him play more minutes. And Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba have obviously been paired together for the last 2 years. Ben Sherratt's emergence has really changed things. And that's why Shane said that there's the possibility that Ben Sherratt will switch from the left side to the right side and play with Mark Stewart, who's a left-shot defenseman. So for me, Drew, the defense pairings will stay the same as the season starts shortly. But I wouldn't be surprised if that changes a little bit based on the fact that Dustin Bufflin, you'd probably want to receive more ice time. And with Jacob Trouba's emergence as more of a shutdown defenseman, he'll play more minutes. I know that everyone would like to see more points from Jacob Trouba, and I would expect his point totals to go up a little bit this year. But I don't think for the coaching staff, for Charlie Huddy, for Paul Maurice, that's all they're looking for. I think they want to see him not only engaged offensively, but they want to see him play those bigger minutes. And Tyler Myers and Tobias Enstrom, they'll probably stay together just because they really had great chemistry. When Tyler Myers came over from Buffalo, him and Tobias Enstrom just seemed to work because you have a small, not only a smaller defenseman, but two guys that can really move the puck and very smart defensemen as well. So I don't think you'll see too much movement at the top there, but Jacob Trouba, Dustin Bufflin, that'd be interesting to see if Trouba can play that left side, because then Trouba and Buff, I mean, that's a very dangerous defense pairing.
Yeah, I think the team should/will play to its strengths, right? I mean, Bufflin and Myers are more offensively talented, in my opinion, than Trouba, at least at this point in their career. So they should be the right side guys on the power play, depending on what format that they utilize, and that can change, as you've seen in season. Enstrom's a great passer, but he doesn't shoot it at all. So you know, how will you deploy him throughout the course of the year? As he mentions, the Trouba, you know, I think it's interesting if you want to maybe put two right side guys on the power play, but then that does prevent some. It takes away, it makes you a little bit easier to defend because certain angles are taken away. Sure. So I wonder if the team just doesn't go and say, Trouba, you're playing our shutdown role, because he's better defensively than Bufflin and better defensively than Myers. You're playing our shutdown role. You're playing big minutes there and big minutes on the PK. We're going to ease up on your power play minutes and give it to the other guys.
Played 3 minutes and 20 seconds of shorthanded ice time per game on average last year. 1 minute 56 on the power play.
And I'm saying a little bit more even.
You're saying more, yes, more shorthanded, yeah. Even less.
Or more even strength.
Sure. Like even strength Bufflin, was 18 minutes.
Yeah, Bufflin was loaded up even strength last year, right?
Right.
So, I mean, maybe ease up on him a little bit and load up even more power play time. Or ease up on shorthanded time. I just think that there are strengths and weaknesses to this defense that can be leaned on a little bit more than they have.
Well, we've talked about it throughout the summer, and we said, you know, we think that all these guys aren't 18-minute game guys on the right side, Myers, Bufflin, and Trouba. We think they're probably better off with, you know, 21, 22, 23 minutes.
They're all horses.
Yeah. So do you expect to see, you know, Paul Maurice maybe deploy one of them on the left side more often?
Well, Myers is a 25-minute guy. He averaged 25 minutes. And
right.
Sorry, that some of that is from Buffalo. But, no, right. I agree with you, Drew. I think that when you're looking at these six defensemen, and Shane Knighty said this, this is a really good group of defensemen. To me, it's a top 10 group of defensemen, and I think that really changed when Tyler Myers came over in the trade, obviously, for Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian. Mm-hmm. But I think that when you have D pairings that work, and these D pairings worked, and sure, Paul Postma are going to be the extra defensemen, but why would you change that? And the reason would be to get more out of Dustin Bufflin, to get more out of Jacob Trouba, to increase their ice time a little bit. When you look at Ben Sherratt and Dustin Bufflin there, you probably have to play a Ben Sherratt a little bit more just because he doesn't play as much in those penalty-killing special team situations. So that's why you probably see that a little bit more. So to answer your question, I do think the ice time will be up a little bit more for certain players. Mark Stewart, I would expect to go down a little bit, but as far as Tobias Enstrom and Tyler Myers go, they've been right up there around 23, 24 minutes. I don't think that'll change much. Those are your horses. You got to ride them.
A whole season of Myers will probably leave a little bit more, you know, decisions to be made throughout the year. You know what you're getting, Ezzy, I think. But, you know, you might mix it up a little bit more. Members only really, well, the end of...
Yeah, 20 games.
20 games, and then you have your postseason. So They'll mix it up a bit. I think this is what you're seeing right now, guys, to start the season. And sometimes we overanalyze the beginning of the season. If it was five games in the middle of the season, you wouldn't put it under the microscope like that. Paul Maurice, in my opinion, doesn't know what he's going to get of the young players. So what's he doing is reverting back to what's reliable. He's got Little, Ladd, and Wheeler. He knows what he's getting there. Okay, he's got Scheifele in the middle. He's insulating him with Perreault. You don't need to necessarily insulate him, but he's got Perreault.
Well, Scheifele's going to be... You would expect Scheifele's offensive numbers to increase if he's playing against third-line talent against them.
Yeah, I mean, you could even argue against the talent he was playing last year just because he's a year older and he's coming into his prime.
Right.
But the point is, he's going back to old reliable. Okay, so what does he have? Starting is with his regular goalie with Pavlik. You're not going to do anything crazy there right now. You're starting with your top line that you know works for you, and you're going back to the defense pairings of last year. I think we'd be naive to think that that's going to last, but he's going to go back to what he knows at the beginning of the season. If they struggle at the beginning and go 0-1-3, he'll probably mix it up a bit because he's trying to lean on what he knows.
Sure.
And if it works, then they'll probably go with it for a while, and they can always mix it up. But that's why I think he's making the decisions he has.
It's hard enough to bring four new bodies into your lineup and then, you know, put them into a blender that you don't really understand and you don't really know how they're going to fit in. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right to your point about, you know, he's going with what he knows, and that just makes logical sense.
That's what most coaches do. That's
and, Drew, what's really nice for the defense, Charlie Huddy specifically, but Paul Maurice as well, Charlie Huddy, because, of course, he works with the defense,
sure.
But it's all the new faces are on forward. So for me, going into the season, I don't have any question marks with this group of defensemen. I mean, Ben Chiarot surprised me a lot last year when he came in with all those injuries in December, and he's only gotten better. I thought Ben Chiarot was arguably the best defenseman for the Jets in the preseason. I mean, sometimes he tries to pinch a little bit, but you know, he's defensively responsible. You know, he'll throw the odd body check, and he's got a decent shot. He can chip in offensively. Although that Enstrom, Myers, Buff, these are the guys that are going to Trouba are going to chip in most of the goals from the blue line. So I have no worries about this defense, even though Chiarot is only in his second year. But as far as all the other defensemen, these guys are veterans. So there's going to be some growing pains up front when it comes to these rookies, but Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy know whoever they put out there, whatever pairs they put out there on defense, these guys have experience, with maybe the exception of Chiarot, even though he's got the year, and they can get the job done. I mean, the biggest difference, we've said this all throughout last year and going into training camp, the biggest difference for the Jets last season was the goaltending and the way they played within a defensive structure. And these players on the back end finally grasped Paul Maurice's system, and they became a very good defensive team. And so, you know, I think that's now the strength of this team, whereas it used to be the weakness.
Right, but they're more skilled now, and younger, talented players who are smaller won't be as good defensively. So how much do you give defensively to get offense? That's a theme too, right?
Yep. Tobias Enstrom's numbers weren't where he wanted them last year. Mm-hmm. I think Jacob Trouba would probably have liked to chip in some more goals. So I think Richie's right. I think you got to strike a balance. Tyler Myers, for example, I mean, he's a guy. We've seen him, you know, jump into the rush, and he can score goals too. So I think they want to make sure that they play well defensively and pick their spots and make sure that they're jumping in offensively as well.
I think Paul Maurice would be, you know, if the Jets dropped a couple goals in terms of goals for throughout the course of the year compared to last season, but kept the goals against the same, that's a trade-off I think Paul Maurice is willing to take.
I 100% agree with
that. I mean, he knows that they can't become anything other than, you know, they have to be defensively conscious first and foremost.
I have some concerns about that.
But whether they can pull it off. Yeah. Well, why don't we go to break and we'll talk more about those concerns. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Kessler lost the draw, but it came back toward the near side wall. Sliding down there is Fowler. Came out in front for Kessler. His shot. What a stop by Pavlik. Diving out Pavlik on Ryan Kessler. Robbed him. Great save. The best save of the night by Andre Pavlik to preserve the one goal lead for Winnipeg at 4-3.
Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. The Jets are going to have to rely a lot on big saves by Andre Pavlik if they want to repeat as a playoff team in the 2015-16 season. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Richie, we'll talk about Pavlik coming up this segment, but you also said you have some, you know, concerns about the defensive side of the game for the Jets.
It's tough to be a really good defensive team when you have a young team. I know they were young last year as well, but you're infusing some more young talent into the roster, and you know, it's a man's game, and some of these guys, there's a lot of defense down low, and I don't think it's going to be crippling by any means, Drew, but, you know, the big guys that they have, Truba's a real good defensive, you know, and guys like him and Stewart, you know, you can't push them around. Bufflin can't either, but Bufflin and Myers, sometimes they get a little lost in their own zone, and Enstrom can certainly get muscled off the puck, and Trott should help in that regard. But it's more so the forwards and how many of them are that adept defensively by playing the defensive game. You know, because you're going with the three skill lines here. I understand that. But, I mean, how many of these guys are you? If you look at the top nine, how many of them are really good defensive players? I'd say not more than the third. So there's going to be some times that they're going to have problems down low defending and just in transition game a little bit. And I think they're going to be able to create offense that they weren't able to last year. I mean, I'm saying that as that's going to be combating the problem that they have.
That's the flip side.
But defensively, I think they're not going to be without issue this year.
Well, I mean, so, you know, along that topic, I mean, Alex Burmistrov, when he was here under the Claude Noel regime, you know, he surprised myself. He surprised a lot of people, I think, with how adept he was defensively and how, you know, responsible he was in his own zone. You know, if the Jets, you know, sort of say to him, you know, worry less about the offense. The offense might come or might not. But be a defensive guy. Can he do that role for the Jets? Can he fulfill that role?
I mean, defense is not it's more of a mindset than anything else, Drew.
Sure.
It's if he wants to play the role.
And it seems like he has that mindset within him, though.
It's a lot easier to have the mindset when you're on a big contract or on a secure contract, and you know it's not going to be held against you. If you remember the old Bobby Holik in Jersey thing, where they, as he would know this more than anybody. I think it was in Roy McGregor's book about how they told him, play defense, and make sure you take care of your own zone. And he was a dominating checking line center. And it came to negotiations. It's like, well, you scored 35 points. What do you want?
The Devils held his offensive totals against
them.
That's a
tricky one. And a guy like that who had a problem with his role before, I'm not saying he's going to have a problem this time, but I'm saying it's probably on the top of his mind, too. If you want me to play defense and get 25 points and you say you're happy with me, well, am I ever going to, you know, cash in? So, I'm not saying it's just about the money with him. I got to see. Last time he was complaining, I thought unnecessarily. But I think that's for any player, too, is if you're asked to play that defensive role at the expense of offense, you have to ensure that you have to be sure that your team is going to be wanting to commit to you.
And this third line for the Winnipeg Jets, Richie, is not going to be just your kind of prototypical third line shutdown line. I think Adam Lowry has shown that he can play both sides of the puck. Very good defensive forward. We talked about the faceoffs. That'll come. But when you're talking about Drew Stafford on that line, whether it's Drew Stafford or whether it's Nikolai Ehlers on that line, hey, Matthew Perreault might even be on that line. They're going to want some goals from that line because they know that that fourth line is young, and Paul Maurice has a tendency not to play that fourth line as much. So that means that your third line is going to be counted on for more goals than maybe some other fourth lines and other teams that the coach uses that line. But look, I think Alexander Burmistrov has a lot of talent. I agree with Rich. I watched all those preseason games. I don't think Alexander Burmistrov had a great training camp and a great preseason, but the skill set is there, and I think you do see a more mature player. I think Alexander Burmistrov will be relied upon more by Paul Maurice, but he's also going to have that offense because they didn't bring him back just, you know, to check the second and third lines of other teams. I think they'd like that, but I think they're going to want him to provide some offense because Michael Frolik did both, guys. He was a good defensive forward, and he could chip in goals.
Right. Let's shift to goaltending then. Andrei Pavlik enters the season as the, to my mind, the undisputed number one. So do you believe that we're going to see him sort of, at least to start, as that number one goalie, or do you think that Paul Maurice is going to employ that rotation that we saw for the, that was so successful, really, for the Jets for the first half of the regular season last season?
That's a good question because it gets off the top with two back-to-backs.
Two sets of back-to-backs.
Yeah, so I mean,
how does he, you know...
I think he'll probably go two different netminders both times, keep them fresh early on, and then ride Pavlik a little bit more. Will Pavlik play at the same level he did last year? I don't think so. I think his numbers will be a little bit worse.
Can the Jets survive with his numbers being a little... I mean, the reason his numbers were so high is because of that stretch at the end of the year, the 12 games where he was unbelievable, where he was Carey Price-esque for the last, you know, 2 weeks worth of games of the season. Can the Jets survive, be a playoff team, flourish, if his numbers do take that step back, or if he plays, you know, similar to how he played for the majority of last year, maybe even a little bit above that for the majority of the last year?
I think part of that depends on Hutchinson.
Right.
What does he do? Does he fade a little bit when he played more at the end of the year? Does he stay at a steady level? You know, does a guy like Hellebuck carve his way into the roster later in the season, and what happens if there's injuries? I still think if he takes a little bit of a step back that they can still make the playoffs. I do think that. I mean, if he takes a massive step back, I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, there's some middle ground there. I think there's still some room to move.
And someone we haven't mentioned, and I know people are going to lose their lid here, but Connor Hellebuck is a potential goaltender for this team this year. And by that, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you see Connor Hellebuck play before, and Gary Lawless mentioned this on HNL right before we came on, before Christmas maybe. Does an injury have to take place for that to happen? Maybe. But the point being that if Andrei Pavlik takes a step back, Richie, and even Michael Hutchinson takes a little bit of a step back, you have the option of bringing in Connor Hellebuck to see what he can do. And that's a little bit different because last year there was no chance Connor Hellebuck was going to play at all. That was his first pro year. Now you've already had a year in the AHL. He was great with the St. John's Icecaps last year, and he'll probably be just as good this year, if not close to that level. He's an excellent young prospect, and we've talked about it. He was ranked the number one goalie prospect and all that, if you want to take that for anything. So I think Andrei Pavlik, I agree with Rich, I think he is the number one goaltender, but I wouldn't be surprised if, especially this early part of the season, on these four-game situations here on the road trip, I think that you'd probably see Hutchinson at the very least play one game, if not two games. But as the season progresses, you'd probably like to see one goaltender take the bull by the horns. And whether that's Andrei Pavlik or Michael Hutchinson, now you know there's two goalies that are able to do it. Because in previous years, with Al Montoya, for example, you knew that he was only going to play a max of something like 15 games.
Right. I said with Ezzy, but I think one of the shows you missed, Drew, I said with Ezzy, I think that you're going to see Hellebuck play this year. And I wouldn't be shocked if Hutchinson struggles a bit and he were to be elevated to play some games, and that might cause some questions later on in terms of, you know, who should be playing. But that wouldn't shock me.
And that's nothing against Michael Hutchinson. I mean, across the NHL, we see that happen. I mean, Andrew Hammond, Devin Dubnyk, you can go on and on.
Year to year, it's so unpredictable.
Right. So, and that doesn't mean that we think Michael Hutchinson's going to struggle, because I like Michael Hutchinson a lot. But what all we're saying is that there is a chance that if Michael Hutchinson struggles, they call up a guy like Connor Hellebuck to back up Andrei Pavlik, or to back up Michael Hutchinson if Pavlik struggles. But the only thing with that is he has to go on waivers.
Sure. The flip side to that point, though, is for the last couple of years, we've all heard about the next wave of goaltenders. Jake Allen was supposed to come in and be good in St. Louis. He wasn't. John Gibson, still, you know, we're waiting for him to make his mark in Anaheim. He hasn't. So, you know, there has been, you know, you're waiting for these goaltenders and you think they're ready to you know, grasp the Holy Grail. And for whatever reason, they're just not quite able to get it when the opportunity sits there for them.
And I think the key to the Jets making the playoffs, one of the keys is going to be a guy like Martin Jones. Like, does he turn out to be the goalie that San Jose hopes and expects for him to be? I think you think that he's going to be good enough, and you have them to make the playoffs.
That's right.
I mean, if he doesn't play well, they're not making the playoffs.
You're absolutely right. If Martin Jones isn't what San Jose hopes, thinks that he is when they acquired him from
for Boston first round pick
and via Los Angeles. Yep. I mean, that's, you know, the Sharks wanted Martin Jones, obviously, but the Kings wouldn't trade him within division. So yeah, they had to trade him to Boston, and then the Sharks got him from Boston.
I don't remember if it might have been Pierre LeBrun. It might have been Elliot Friedman. This week I read that had they not traded for him, they intended on offer sheeting him. That's how much San Jose wanted Martin Jones.
Oh, so they had identified him as their goalie of the future, but maybe the future isn't this year. Or maybe the future is, you know, is wrong.
I mean, it's such a crapshoot with these goaltenders. Look at Devan Dubnyk. Look at these guys. I mean, Hammond's performance, obviously, last year that you mentioned. Who really knows?
We don't know. It's interesting.
But you guys both have the Jets to miss the playoffs.
We do. You don't have to do it yet. Save it for 7:45. You have that one slot still available. We're going to recap our playoff predictions at the end of the show.
Okay.
We made them on Saturday's show, and Ezzy and I went on the record, and we named our 8 playoff teams in the West, and we both had the Jets falling out of the playoffs. Richie's named 7 of his West playoff teams. Doesn't have number 8 yet. You're holding one slot open. At the end of the show, you'll determine if you think the Jets are going to be a playoff team or not.
I will.
Sounds fair?
Sounds fair.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Jack Edwards, Bruins broadcaster, are going to join us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba's 40th annual luncheon. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to support Silo Mission and their project to replace the front doors and concrete slab at the entrance of their supportive housing development in Wolseley. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba or to purchase tickets to their 40th anniversary luncheon, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the show our good friend. He's the Boston Bruins play-by-play broadcaster for the New England Sports Network, Jack Edwards. Jack, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us, and happy welcome to the 2015-16 NHL season.
You want to trade us Jacob Trouba for three draft choices?
You know, I'll run it past the Jets front office management, but I think they might pass on that one right now.
You think Chevy's going to turn me down on that one?
he might, but there's a lot of talk about the rumor mill about maybe Bufflin being a fit there in Boston going forward.
Well, you know, if you were to drop a potential great X-factor partner for Zdeno Chara, Dustin Bufflin might be the guy. He's a fabulous weapon. He's an interesting player. He's also 30 years old, and in the last year of his contract, and he's earning 5.2 now, so you figure he's probably going to jump to 7-something.
Yeah.
And if they were afraid to pay Dougie Hamilton that kind of money, I'm not really sure they're going to be willing to jump up and pay Bufflin that kind of money. But, you know, I don't know. It's a mystery as to how the Bruins are going to solve this riddle, because they've certainly put themselves in a position where a whole lot of young defensemen are going to have to play pretty close to their ceiling in the first 8 weeks of the season, or they are really going to have to chase it in the last half of the season. It's just, this is an unusual situation, because you've gone from being considered one of the top dogs in the Eastern Conference to being an underdog in one off season, and that's the position the Bruins are in going into tomorrow night against a Winnipeg team that is a pretty good team. And I get the sense, and obviously I haven't seen them in person yet this preseason, but you get the sense that they're pretty hungry. And Paul Maurice has a way of sort of sharpening the tooth a little bit and biting it into the hindquarters of the players. And I think they're getting the message, you know, because those last couple of preseason games, I saw a little bit of jump there and some hunger that's going to be kind of interesting to see how it plays out in the Central.
Well, we'll get to some of the questionable decisions made by Bruins general manager Don Sweeney in this offseason in the course of the interview. First question, sort of on the minds of most Jets fans entering into tomorrow night's season opener, Zdeno Chara. You mentioned how important he is. He's been practicing with the Bruins. You expect him to be back in the lineup for tomorrow, or do you think he's still going to need, you know, maybe miss the first game or two as he recovers from his injury?
The sense is that he is going to do everything he can to get in the lineup. Chara doesn't like sitting out ever. And especially the first game of a season where he is being looked upon not only to display the leadership that he's displayed in the past, but also to prove that he can still play this game at a really high level and consistently. And to start the season on the injured list is not the way he wants to get going. I think that if he is medically capable of going, if he is cleared by the doctors for full contact, that he's going to go.
Jack, as you know, the Bruins really struggled to score last year. They were in the bottom third of the NHL in scoring at 2.55 goals per game. Do you think that the Bruins, Don Sweeney, general manager of the Bruins, do you think the Bruins have done enough to address this issue by acquiring players such as Jimmy Hayes and others? Are they going to be able to score enough goals this year?
I don't think the problem is with the forwards. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is going to be the puck's in their end of the ice 60% of the time. It's hard to score if you're chasing it around the back 64 feet of the rink. And I think that's the problem the Bruins are going to face, especially early in the season. You know, they've got some young defensemen who may end up being really, really good, and a couple, at least one in Colin Miller, who may end up being great. You know, it's way, way, way too early to be able to tell with these young defensemen. But if you go by the Denny Potvin rule of thumb, which is that it takes 200 games for an NHL defenseman really to figure out his position and show consistently what he's going to be. The Bruins could go into tomorrow night with exactly one defenseman with that much experience, you know, depending on how things work out. You know, McQuaid, you throw him in, you know, you got a couple. But, you know, there aren't too many guys on this team who play defense who've had 200 games in the NHL. And that's a significant issue. And it doesn't really matter how good the forwards are. And, you know, that said, I think the forwards are going to be a lot hungrier. They're going to have an aggressive attitude that was lacking at times last year when the Bruins hit some flat spots. But they really need to look at the defense and how they're going to help the defense get the puck out of the defensive end.
You know, Jack, last year was probably in about February, so the two guys beside me were, you know, the topic kind of around the NHL was, is the Bruins window closing? And the two guys beside me thought it wasn't, seemed to be correct. And I sat here saying, you know, you look at this roster, there's still a ton of talent. They're not removed from the success that they recently had. But just the roster 1 through 18 still had a lot of players who I thought were, you know, quality players and pretty solid coaching staff. What's happened to this squad? I mean, not only just the dismantling of the roster, but what led to that?
Well, if you're asking my personal opinion, which is not that of the Boston Bruins, and I would never claim to speak for the team, mm-hmm. They went through an injury-plagued season. And if there is a connection between playing a lot of games in the last 4 years or 5 years with those injuries, I'm not sure. That's the kind of thing that upper-level management has to decide and make the call about. But to me, this was a matter of a perfect storm. David Krejci got hurt in the last preseason game. Johnny Boychuk got traded just days before the season began. So there was instability in the forward lines in the top six. There was instability in the top four defensemen because of the Boychuk deal. They never patched the hole where Ginla left it. And yeah, you know, they went all in 2014. They tried to win the cup. They knew they weren't going to be able to re-sign Ginla if he had any kind of year. And he hit every single incentive. So not only could they not afford to keep him as a free agent, they were playing with tag money that Ginla had earned with his bonuses. So they knew that was going to hurt them, but they never fixed that. They never patched that hole. And then Krejci comes back and he gets hurt. And then Chara gets the PCL. And Dennis Seidenberg never really rounded into form until late February or so. You combine all those factors and, you know, maybe you just say, well, do we just take a mulligan on this one? Do we say this was a year that a lot of stuff went wrong all at once, or do we need to retool the team, or do we need to rebuild the team? They traded Milan Lucic because they followed the rule of thumb that you got to trade a guy the year before you have to trade him, right? Mm-hmm. And Lucic is in his contract year. Right now he's playing with Kopitar and Gavrik, and that might be the scariest line in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So, you know, good luck to him, and Lucic might have a career year and make $8 million a year next year, and that's something the Bruins couldn't afford. So, you know, there were a whole bunch of factors. I would have been tempted to tweak it and not to rip it up. And,
me
and
too.
Especially the Dougie Hamilton trade, which a lot of people are still having a hard time figuring out.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is Jack Edwards, Boston Bruins play-by-play broadcaster on the New England Sports Network. Jack, one of the roster moves that the Bruins made, they bring in Jimmy Hayes from the Florida Panthers. Hayes, of course, a Massachusetts guy himself from Boston. Big body, but oftentimes doesn't play to his size. He's 6'6", reportedly. Doesn't necessarily play that big all the time. You know, what are the Bruins hoping for from Jimmy Hayes? This is a guy, you know, 35 points in 72 games last year with Florida. What's a successful year for Jimmy Hayes in his first season as a member of the Bruins?
Have either of you guys seen the film Good Will Hunting?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. A lot of that was shot in Dorchester. Jimmy Hayes is from Dorchester. Now, what do you think his buddies are going to do if he mails it in for even one shift? they are going to make his life a living hell. His phone is going to explode while it's still in the dressing room before he even gets to it after the game. He is going to have to work harder than any Bruin to satisfy the people in his very hometown, and he expects to. I actually spent a good deal of time with Jimmy at a charity function this summer, and he has shed, I don't know, 5 or 7 pounds, but he's lifting more weight than he's ever lifted. So he's obviously gotten leaner and stronger. There was a question about his fitness level in Florida. And as Sean Thornton so eloquently said, if you're going to play for Claude Julien, you better show up on the first day of camp in the best shape of your life. And I do think that Jimmy Hayes has done that. I'm not sure in a third-line role and playing some power play that we can put a number on it much higher than 20 goals, because the way Claude matches up, he's going to expect that third line to contribute offensively, but he's also going to expect that third line to make sure that nothing bad happens while they're on the ice. I think that Jimmy's got the challenge of his lifetime, but I think that every elite athlete seeks that challenge. And if he really wants to be a star, and I think he does, he's just going to have to deliver a superior effort and then let the numbers figure themselves out. But, yeah, they're looking for 20 from him.
Jack, Kevin Miller is another one of those young players on defense that the Bruins are going to have to rely on, especially with Dennis Seidenberg out with an injury. Zach Trotman is another guy. Torrey Krug, people forget, he's still pretty young too.
Yeah.
As far as Kevin Miller goes, a lot of people don't know a lot about him. What have you seen from him in preseason? And is he right now going to line up on that third pairing for the Bruins?
Looks as if that might be the spot. It's really hard to tell how these guys are going to get their ice time distributed. Claude tends to start out with pairs, and then he's going to play guys in situations. The most famous case of that being when Chara and Seidenberg would start the game on two different pairs in the playoffs in 2011, and then every single crunch situation, they were out there together. Mm-hmm. So the thing that's concerning about Kevin Miller is that he had a season-ending shoulder injury. Actually, he first injured it falling down at the end of a fight with Buffalo's Nicolas Deslauriers, who's a pretty tough customer. And Miller held his own in the fight, at least, but had an awkward off-balance slip at the end, and his shoulder popped out. And it was obvious his shoulder popped out. That was not your generic upper body injury. Everybody in the arena could see it. He spent the time, rehabbed it, came back, and then it popped out again in a game at Calgary that the Bruins, after he left, subsequently blew a 3-goal lead and lost in overtime to the Magical Flames. He got in a fight with Tom Wilson of Washington in the last preseason game. He actually got in 2 bouts with Wilson during that game. And it seemed to me that he could not raise his right shoulder above shoulder height during the brawl. And to me, that says there's something attached there. And, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'm not going to disclose medical information, but I don't have any to disclose either. So, you know, it looks to me as if he's got an impingement or something that's restricting his movement. And I worry about that because he's a great kid and he's going to give everything he's got to give for the team. But I cannot help but think that even after months and months of rehabilitating the injury after the surgery, that he's not at 100% and he's playing in a compromised position just to begin the season.
Final question for you, Jack. You know, think of certain situations. I think of most situations, frankly, aside from Alain Vigneault, the GM changes, the players change, and the coach stay the same. Usually the coach that stays the same doesn't stay the same for very long. I think really Vigneault is that exception in Vancouver from what I can remember. Claude Julien, obviously been very successful, but different people around him, different players, different management. People are picking him to be maybe the first coach let go, and we know how good of a coach he is. How secure is his position there?
Well, it's as secure as anybody who's walking across a series of trap doors, right? You know, sort of like being in broadcasting.
So,
yeah. Claude's the best coach the Bruins have ever had, and I challenge anyone to take me on in that argument. He's just a few wins shy of Art Ross for the all-time wins lead on the Bruins. No Bruins coach has won more than one Stanley Cup. Claude has won more games in one stretch of coaching the Bruins than anybody. Art Ross was also the general manager and frequently put himself behind the bench after he gassed the coach who was there and actually coached the team four times. And, you know, we all know kind of a legendary figure, Art Ross.
Yeah.
So my attitude toward Claude's job security is this. He is a very underrated teacher. If you go back and you look at the roster that he inherited in Montreal when he got his first NHL coaching job, it was actually kind of similar in ways to this Boston team. There were some young, promising defensemen. Francois Beauchemin was on that team. I think Andre Markov was on that team, but they hadn't blossomed yet. And there were some older guys, Craig Rivé, notably, who were, you know, definitely on the back nine. And he had to find a way to get that team to play together. Well, he came in midseason and, you know, so-so. But the next year, by midseason, they were really a difficult team to play against. That's the situation he's in now. He's got to be a different coach than he was when he was coaching guys who had skated around the ice with a Stanley Cup over their head and thought they knew it all. You know, he's gone back to being an elementary school teacher, if you will. And if they decide that they've got to move on from him, I sure hope they've done the addition equation, because the subtraction equation is going to leave a massive void. He is the best coach the Boston Bruins ever have had. And if they bring somebody else in, the possibility exists that they'll put this whole franchise on a slippery slope for a couple of years.
Jack Edwards is the Boston Bruins play-by-play broadcaster on the New England Sports Network. He's a frequent guest here on this program. Jack, always appreciate your time. Great insight into the Bruins. Have a great call tomorrow and have a great 2015-16 season.
Thanks, boys. I've been watching the Jets in preseason. That's going to be a really exciting team this year. Good luck.
Thanks very much, Jack. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Jack Edwards, Boston Bruins play-by-play man, for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview or the interview earlier in the program with Jets analyst Shane Knighty, they'll be available on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also find it on our website, illegalcurve.com. Coming up in about 5 to 7 minutes' time, Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils analyst, is going to join us on the program. Talk about the Jets' Friday opponents. That being the New Jersey Devils. What do you think about this four-game road trip to start?
It's an easy start, and it's a tough finish.
To the season, because they finished with three West Coast games, I believe.
I'm talking about the first four games.
Oh, I thought you meant the end of the season. Yeah, Boston, New Jersey, and then Rangers, Islanders.
I mean, you know, it's, you don't panic early in the season, but these first two games, I mean, these teams aren't very good. Boston's defense, Jack Edwards talked about, you look at their defense, it's unrecognizable, frankly. And the Devils defense has some nice young players on it, but their roster as a whole is leaves something to be desired. So you have a new coach in New Jersey, you have the Boston situation where some kind of changes. I think you want to take advantage of it. This is a team, the Jets, aside from these young guys, who've been together for a while now. A lot of these guys have been in the roster for a long time.
Sure.
So
Boston this year sort of reminds me to some degree of San Jose last year. You know, less controversy around it, but San Jose, you know, they didn't fire Todd McClellan. They brought him back, and they regretted that decision at the end of the season after they didn't make the playoffs. And it seems like, you know, they left Claude Julien in limbo for so long. I mean, the vote of confidence that he's got is tepid at best.
But they kept the same players, really.
San Jose did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, the core in Boston, I mean, I guess Lucic is gone, and I mean, so he's the biggest player. I mean, would you say Dougie Hamilton? He was very talented.
I mean, the point was that apparently what had happened is Pierre Chiarelli decided he was going to trade Boychuk because he wanted to sign Hamilton. He had to make a decision, he thought, between the two of them. The problem was he traded Boychuk, new brass came in and didn't want Hamilton. They traded Hamilton.
Yeah.
So he went from a really good right side to a pretty terrible right side.
There's still a lot sort of that hasn't been reported, I think. Maybe there's a lot that's unknown about the Bruins, about the Dougie Hamilton relationship in that Bruins locker room.
Well, maybe so, Drew, maybe. But I still think that the trade did not give them what they needed or what his value was. I mean,
I agree. I think it was a poor decision on the Bruins management part to cut bait so quickly. But, I mean, there's still lots that I think that was going on bubbling underneath the surface that people don't know about. But, I mean, Don Sweeney certainly put himself on the chopping block nice and early in his regime.
Well, is he, or is he with Cam Neely secure and he can do whatever he wants for the next few years?
Well, I mean, yeah.
They played together for how long?
Sure, there's certainly some security involved in that, you know, but if, you know, at some point in time, if the results aren't there, the voice.
Yeah, but how much of a grace period do they get?
Well, but do they get? I don't think they get much of a grace period because this wasn't a team that was, you know, that was bottoming out. This isn't the Toronto Maple Leafs where nobody has any expectations for them. I mean, this is the Bruins, you know, last year going into the season last season, you would have said the Bruins are a Stanley Cup contender, Ezzy.
Well, it's because they won the President's Trophy the previous year.
Exactly.
So nobody really goes from winning the President's Trophy to being a team that isn't competing for the playoffs. And look, they finished 2 points out of a playoff spot. The Boston Bruins didn't exactly, you know, crap the bed. I mean, they were a decent enough team last year. But I agree with Richie. I thought the Dougie Hamilton trade was a good trade for Calgary and a bad trade for Boston, quite simply because Boston didn't have the depth that they had in previous years. So you're talking about Johnny Boychuk. Dennis Seidenberg's a year older. Zdeno Chara is a year older. Zdeno Chara, even though he might be in his late 30s now, is still an excellent defenseman, but he's not that dominant defenseman that they had when they won the Cup in 2011. So when you look at the Bruins, and as Rich pointed out, you've got question marks. Zach Trotman, you know, is he going to be able to step into a first or second line D-pairing role? Probably not, because he hasn't done it. Or if he does, he's going to have struggles. And most likely he will start the season off in the top four for the Boston Bruins. This Boston Bruins team was always built on good goaltending, good defense, and a team toughness. And I think they've lost the team toughness a little bit over the years. So you're talking about, you know, Sean Thornton's gone, Milan Lucic is gone, Jerome Iginla's gone. And even though Matt Bolesky, you know, he's a big guy and he's got some physicality, I mean, you're talking about kind of the team identity. I think the team identity has been lost here in Boston. And, hey, Jack Edwards even mentioned it. The injuries that the Boston Bruins had last year with David Krejci and Chara and others, I mean, it's tough for any team to really survive that. We saw that with the Columbus Blue Jackets. So this Boston Bruins team, even though a lot of people might be picking them to miss the playoffs, and I am as well, I don't think by any stretch of the imagination are they going to be a bottom team in the East this year.
The problem I have with, I mean, signing Bolesky to the, you know, is a too long term. Well, okay, sure, you can take issue with the term. The dollar amount wasn't prohibitive. Yeah. I thought it was a fine contract. I didn't have a huge issue. Again, would I give the guy 5 years? No. But he didn't kill you on the cap hit. Trading Lucic, getting a first, and then you're getting Jones in the package, and then flipping him for getting two firsts for Lucic with a pending UFA who I think is overrated. That was a good move. But in a vacuum, some of their moves worked. But when you trade away from a young defenseman, who, again, I told you guys, I don't even love Dougie Hamilton. I don't love his defensive game. He's not always as physical as maybe you hope he's going to be. And but he's still a good player at a position of weakness, especially on the right side. So it just didn't make sense with the plan. Like, that's what I think. That's what I'm wondering. Was there a plan?
Well, I mean, and that's, you know, I think what's really going, you're going to look back on this offseason for the Bruins in a couple years. And I think part of the problem was that people thought that Don Sweeney reached with his draft picks. If those draft picks turn out to be
That's not Don Sweeney making those picks, Drew.
Well, I know it's not. But, okay, the Bruins, I mean, Don Sweeney in the form of the Bruins organization.
Yes.
If it turns out that those draft picks are better than people give him credit for, or better than people thought in the moment, all of a sudden he's a genius of a general manager.
Exactly, and it's going to depend. How does Jake DeBrusk turn out? How does Zach Senyshyn turn out? How does Jakobs Borrell turn out? We don't know. We're at least 2-3 years away from really knowing how those draft picks turn out. So, you know, right now, I agree with Rich. The Lucic trade probably made sense, but it's the trades as a whole, this team as a whole. Have they made enough changes to get better defensively and score more goals? Like, this team was one of the best defensive teams in the NHL for 5 years, and offensively they were one of the best teams. And right now you'd probably say that they're probably a bottom five, bottom 10 defensive team. Not goaltending. Well, I mean, Tuukka Rask is still, I mean, he's only a couple years removed from winning the Vezina Trophy.
Sure.
But we're talking about that group of defensemen because Zdeno Chara, used to play 30 minutes a game.
Sure.
He can't do that anymore. No. At least he can't do it at the level that he used to. No.
And if you just take a look into Denver and look at all the talented forwards they have and look at their point production when they can't get the puck.
You're talking about the Colorado Avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how good your forwards are if the puck's always in your own zone. Let's head to break. When we come back, Ken Danico, Devils analyst, going to join us to talk about the New Jersey Devils, the Jets' Friday opponent. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 7:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. At Rumors this week, Joe List, hilarious comedian from New York. Tickets available for Joe and for all of the upcoming shows available at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to welcome back to the program New Jersey Devils analyst on MSG Plus, Ken Danico. Ken, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you, pal?
Doing very well, Ken. How about yourself?
Everything's good. Getting ready to start the season against your Jets in a couple of days. I know it all started tonight. Watched a little bit of a Blackhawks celebration, and that's what it's all about for those guys and every player that's ready to get the season going.
Absolutely. The symmetry of starting, you know, they set off the top of the show. Everybody's got hope and you know, confidence on day one of the regular season. The Jets going to be in New Jersey for the Devils' home opener on Friday. Sort of a new regime there in New Jersey with head coach John Hines, general manager Ray Shiro. You know, a young team with the Devils, probably not a ton of expectations in terms of the playoffs. So, you know, how are the Devils going to, you know, evaluate success beyond wins and losses as they enter this season?
Well, look, they always believe you have to in your locker room. Obviously, we certainly understand here in New Jersey, and they read all the articles. The so-called experts, I'll call them, don't give them much of a chance. But I don't play the game on paper. I look at when you get out on the ice. And yes, do they lack a little depth? As far as offensively, no question about it, but I've been very impressed with Coach John Hines, his command of respect for such a young man. The guys have really gotten better and better each day in training camp and started to play better at the end, their last three hockey games. So they believe that, again, like a lot of teams that maybe aren't as deep in the talent pool, they got to do it by committee. They're going to be in a lot of games. They're not going to get outworked. And you have Corey Schneider, to me, top five goaltender in the National Hockey League, with some real good young defensemen. And that's what they're going to rely on. They're going to play a little more up-tempo, faster-paced type of hockey game. That's what they're trying to implement. And, yes, you need the personnel so that they understand that it's, you know, a little bit of a retool, and they're going to have to wait a little bit here, and it might be a process. But I think they can surprise some people, and I think they believe that in the dressing room as well.
Ken, we had Bryce Salvador on the show right after he retired. Of course, he's a good Manitoba boy. The New Jersey Devils haven't named a captain yet, and a lot of people thought it was going to be Patrick Elias. Of course, he's right now suffering from a bit of an injury, a knee injury. But the question is for you, Ken, when you look at the team now, and of course you had one of the best leaders in Scotty Stevens back in the day, Who's the leadership group for this team right now, especially, you know, in the absence of a Patrick Elias?
I think they got a couple of guys, you know, they have in mind. I think that would be Andy Green, certainly, on the back end. He quietly goes about his business. He's a very underrated player. A lot of people don't maybe give him the credit he deserves, but he, to me, is a top defenseman in this league. He rarely makes a mistake. He skates so well, moves the puck well, and very sound positionally, and he's a guy that is a true professional. So for me, you know, Andy Green's certainly a candidate, and you got to look at Adam Henrique. He's the younger of the two, but he's their go-to guy up front, plays in all situations, and he's a guy that I think slowly is developing into one of those leaders, so I think they're going to have to decide that. I don't know if they're going to name a captain. I don't think it was going to be Patrick Elias regardless, just from the standpoint of where he's at in his career. As well as he's been down that road, Patrick's a leader, no question about it, but I don't think at 39 years old they were going to name him captain for the simple fact that, you know, there's not much, he doesn't have many years left as far as playing in the National Hockey League and with the Devils. So, to me, Andy Green or Adam Henrique, I would think along the way here possibly, but they just may go with 3As and wait a year here and see who develops as a leader, since they have the new regime that you talked about with Ray Shiro and John Hines.
Ken, what's been the mood around the team? I know Lou Lamoriello did things a certain way and had tremendous success, and obviously, you know, you being associated with the organization for many years, how is it different around the arena and around the team?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of changes, obviously, and anytime a new regime comes in, you bring in your own people, and that's exactly what Ray Shiro has done, starting with Coach John Hines, the youngest coach in the National Hockey League, and he had some success in the American League as well. That seems to be the trend nowadays, is go with the new guys instead of recycling, you know, coaches that have been around the league or have coached four or five teams throughout their career. And you know, there were times, it's inevitable. It changes something that is needed at times. I think the Devils needed it for sure. Just a little bit of a different philosophy that takes nothing away from Lou Lamoriello and everything he accomplished, and he's been the most important person in the organization as far as building three Stanley Cup championship teams, but it was time, time for a new voice, and I think the philosophy certainly has shifted. The players seem to be rejuvenated, actually, and they're excited about the opportunity. You always get a clean slate, for sure, anytime new people come in, and I think that's what these guys are thinking. And, yes, there's different players on the ice. You know, they've mm-hmm. gotten a little bit younger, and they're going to give some young guys an opportunity along the way here to show what they're capable of. And that means also a couple guys they sent down that had extremely good training camps, so Joseph Blandisi, but they want him to develop a little bit more to the pro game, but I expect to see him come up eventually. So it's certainly a shift in philosophy. There's no question about it. Younger, they want to go faster the way the game has gone.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is Ken Danico, Devils analyst on MSG Plus, as we discuss the Devils, the Jets' Friday opponent, as the Jets kick off the 2015-16 season with a four-game road trip. Ken, we talked about Lou Lamoriello, and lately there's been a lot of chatter about maybe Travis Zajac being of interest to the Toronto Maple Leafs, especially now that Lamoriello's landed there in Toronto. Do you think there's any truth to the rumor that Zajac might be available, and do you see Toronto potentially as a landing spot for him if he does depart from New Jersey?
I think anything's a possibility, but I don't really listen to rumors, unless, especially when they're involving Lou Lamoriello, because he tells nobody anything whatsoever, so I don't quite know where they would get that from. I know he thinks highly of Travis Zajac. There's another leader that maybe I didn't mention, the Manitoba boy, who's a guy that plays the game the right way. He's very responsible all over the ice in all three zones. But he's got to produce more offensively. He knows that, and that's what the Devils are going to rely on, guys like him producing more. Mike Camilleri having the same year he did last year. He was their top scorer and other leaders. So they're going to rely on some of these guys. Is it a possibility? Well, anything's a possibility, obviously, if the right deal comes about. But as far as the rumors involving Lou Lamoriello, they certainly didn't hear it from him.
You know, yeah, exactly. You know, Ken, the acquisitions over the offseason, you mentioned some new players. I like Kyle Palmieri's game, and he's really got a good shot, and I think he can be a good scorer on the wings there. But I want to ask you, not only what he brings to the table, but for a New Jersey kid to be on this squad and for kind of the generation and the time that you played in the game, is there something about that sinks in with you, saying, you know, the game has come farther in this area?
Well, I think so. I mean, obviously, it's all about speed now. It's all about puck movement, about puck possession, all the analytics and everything. That seems to be the buzzword in the National Hockey League now. So organizations are really taking a look at a lot of different elements in the game. And to me, look, everybody asks me, well, you know, the guys are bigger, stronger, faster compared to, I don't know, certainly the 80s, 90s. But and they say the players are better. I think the players are better at the bottom tier. That's the only difference.
Yeah,
nobody's as good as Mario Lemieux still to this day. Nobody's as good as Wayne Gretzky or Mark Messier, in my opinion. So the greats were in the era just before them, I think. No disrespect to the Crosbys and Ovechkins and Tays and all those superstars who are just fantastic players. But I think where the improvement is, it's the bottom six, the bottom two lines. You know, all can score now, all can skate, all can contribute more offensively than maybe in the past. And I think that's the direction the Devils are trying to go here. I mean, but you have to draft well, you have to develop well, you have to make a savvy trade and pick up a free agent when you feel your team's ready to go for it. I like what Ray Shiro did. He came in, he did not just go out after the best available free agent. The Devils have a lot of cap space and a lot of money to spend, but you know, he's going to give it time. There's no use to just do that until you feel it's time or you're close to a playoff spot or you're close to being a championship team. So he's going to be patient, develop some of the young guys, and that seems to be the way the game has gone, especially in the salary cap era.
You look at the back end, Ken, and the team has, you know, a few young guys, but Severson's a guy that I really like, really smart player, seems to make the right play all the time. The big money this offseason, though, went to Adam Larson. Were you surprised to see kind of the new regime come in, not really have seen him firsthand, and then give him the big deal?
Well, obviously, they watch a lot of hockey. A lot of people do, and Adam developed extremely quickly in the last half of the season, and I think you've only seen the tip of the iceberg. Those are the risks you take. I mean, was it a good deal for Adam at the time? Probably. Will it be a bad deal in a couple of years?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
So I think it was a good calculated risk from general manager Ray Shearer, because Adam is really one of those guys they're going to build around. I mean, he is a solid player. His offensive upside continues to grow as well. He's an excellent positional player, so sound defensively. And you've seen his confidence in his game continue to grow. He had another good training camp after finishing the season real strong. And you mentioned Damon Severson from your neck of the woods. To me, this kid can be a stud. Yeah. I think, you know, if he develops the right way and keeps everything in perspective, I've said it many times, and I know I don't want to put pressure on him and people, you know, or anybody will say, well, he's not going to be nearly that good, but I look at him like a poor man's Drew Doughty. I think he's got that kind of capabilities. I like to say he's going to be Drew Doughty, but he's good in both ends of the rink. He can shoot the puck. He's got an incredible ice awareness and hockey sense out there, good defensively. So I think in due time he can be that type of player, and they're going to have a real good one in Damon Severson. So you look at those two guys right there with a veteran Andy Green and Eric Jelena, who's a real good young defenseman. You know, they've got a pretty good core, and that's what they're building from the back out with Corey Schneider and that.
Ken, we've got one final question here, and then we'll let you go. Yesterday, the New Jersey Devils announced that your good friend Martin Brodeur is going to have his number 30 retired, and they're also going to build a statue of Marty Brodeur outside of the Prudential Center. How special was it for you to hear that Marty Brodeur was going to have his number retired? And how come back in 2006 they didn't build a statue of Ken Danico?
That's right.
They didn't have enough steel or clay or whatever they make it out for my head, I guess. Well, all kidding aside, I mean, if there's one player in the organization over the years that deserves a statue, it's Martin Brodeur. And I really, you know, proud of him. And he was here yesterday and got to spend a lot of time together. It was a very special day. And I just like the way the Devils are really making a big deal out of this, because it is. I mean, it was a big press conference with fans there and media and introductions and things like that, and ownership, and something maybe we wouldn't have done in the past. And we're doing it for Martin Brodeur, the franchise player, probably the greatest player in franchise history, and arguably the greatest goaltender as well. So it was a special day, and Marty, you know, you hear all those rumors, guys, and Marty set the slate clear, and I even told him I was a little upset that he left, but I guess he's trying to go on his own terms. He wanted no regrets, and that wasn't going to happen in Jersey, but he seems very content, very happy, and he welcomed this with open arms. So there wasn't as much bitterness between the organization and Martin Brodeur like you see with a lot of icons in any sport. I looked at it like a Brett Favre situation, but it really wasn't. Marty, you know, he's a prideful guy. Anybody that gets to the level he does and as good as he has been throughout his career, you're going to have some pride, and you don't always – you reflect 2-3 years down the road and say, well, maybe it was the right decision for me, but he still felt he could play, and for some reason, it wasn't going to work in Jersey. But now he's getting all the due respect and accolades that he deserves, and his number retired in February. And they made a big, big deal of it yesterday. And I think that was, in itself was a little something different, the way Devils approach things. And we were real proud of him. And I can't wait for Martin Brodeur's night, because this guy was the biggest reason I've got 3 rings on my finger.
Ken Danico is a New Jersey Devils analyst on MSG+. Ken, appreciate your time this evening. Enjoy the start of the 2015-16 NHL season.
Yeah, it should be fun, guys. Great talking to you. Have a good night.
You too, Ken. I should mention, as we head to break, Ken's appearance on the program brought to you by our good friends at Royal Sports. There's a huge hockey stick sale still going on at Royal Sports, plus tons of new Jays playoff gear. So get set for the Jays. The division series starts tomorrow. Get your new playoff gear at Royal Sports. Coming up next, the moment we've waited for about 7 years, we unveil the Illegal Curve sandwich, available exclusively tomorrow at Bernstein's Deli. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We've been doing this program for a number of years now. Started formally, and of course, with our good friends at Red River College. This is pretty much the most important thing we've ever done.
100%. I mean, let's be real here.
First of all, I gotta say, I'm impressed you're actually talking right now. I thought you'd have your mouth full of sandwich.
One necessarily to go gaga over a sandwich like my friend Ezzy over here.
Yeah.
This is the real deal.
Well, we're pleased to welcome the sponsor in of this segment, our good friend Aaron Bernstein from Bernstein's Deli, who has just provided us all with the Illegal Curve Sandwich, which is going to be available starting tomorrow in conjunction with the start of the 2015-16 NHL season. Available starting tomorrow, the Illegal Curve Sandwich at Bernstein's Deli. Aaron, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us on this momentous occasion.
Thanks, Drew. Yes, great to be here. And as you said, we've aligned this with the start of the season.
Yeah.
Perfect. And we have been talking about this for at least 2 or 3 years.
Minimum. Now, we were doing our due diligence. So, you know, of course, we consulted, and, you know, you and your expertise as a deli owner, you consulted with the sandwich experts from around the world. The world's greatest sandwich consultants were flown into Winnipeg to, you know, study the sandwich, to study really what makes up.
I thought Ezzy already lived here.
What makes up Illegal Curve and how you can best, you know, describe us in sandwich form. So, you know, for the audience, why don't you please describe the Illegal Curve sandwich, and so people can know what they can get and what they can expect.
Great question, Drew.
Tomorrow.
Forget the hockey interviews, Drew. This is your real calling.
It's sandwich-related interviews, yes, indeed.
Well, as it happens, every time we've gone together the past year, we talk about what are we going to put on the sandwich, when's the sandwich coming out, what should we put on the sandwich. So, it came together. It was, I think, the first week of the NFL season this year. We were watching football at Richie's and decided, you know, got to go with the chicken schnitzel. That's a good foundation in any sandwich.
Yes, chicken schnitzel.
And then
I'm going to slow you down. So sure. Chicken schnitzel is the key meat in the sandwich.
Yes.
But it's not the only meat in the sandwich. There's a secondary meat as well.
Yeah, it's complemented by Jewish bacon, like grilled Smith salami, nice and crisp and salty.
There you go. So you have a chicken schnitzel. You have grilled salami.
Mm-hmm.
Now keep going.
Yeah, fried onions.
Fried onions, an excellent addition. Who doesn't like a good fried onion?
Can't go wrong with fried onions.
Yeah.
And cheddar cheese.
Cheddar cheese.
Course,
now,
melted.
There's a lot of different kinds of cheddar cheese. You know, there's some that are sharp. There's some that are medium.
It's an orange medium cheddar.
It's an orange medium cheddar. Okay, so that it won't be too overpowering. It won't overpower the salami
or
the
schnitzel. This is amazing.
That's right. And then, of course. Of course, you know, held together by thick sliced city rye bread.
City rye bread.
There you go.
With some honey mustard on it.
Honey mustard. Now, that's...
honey mustard is an amazing compliment.
Yes, the honey mustard is fantastic. So this is the Illegal Curve Sandwich. One more time, I'm going to recite it. And again, available tomorrow starting tomorrow, I should say. Not just tomorrow, but starting tomorrow.
Of course.
At Bernstein's
Deli. On an ongoing
Deli.
Basis.
Yes, located in the Cordon Village Mall at the corner of Cordon and Lanark. It is the Illegal Curve Sandwich. It's chicken schnitzel with grilled Smith salami.
So good.
Fried onions, medium cheddar cheese on buttered thick rye toast with honey mustard as the sauce. Now, Ezzy, what's most impressive to me is that even though the sandwich is really only available starting tomorrow, is that you've somehow managed to have a dozen of them already.
Yeah, it's true.
I haven't had a dozen. This is my second. I was given a inaugural taste test yesterday. I went to Bernstein's Deli because Aaron knew that the most handsome member of Illegal Curve had to try the sandwich first. But, Aaron, I can speak for all three of us and Dave Manuk as well. I can say that this sandwich
And Alex,
mm-hmm. producer Alex, of course, who is trying the sandwich right now. I can speak unequivocally for us and say that this sandwich is going to be a game changer. And Gary Lawless is going to be forced to have to go to Bernstein's Deli and try one of these. They're that good.
Well, you don't ever have to force anybody to go to Bernstein's Deli. But yes, when Gary comes in, because we've had this ongoing rivalry with Hustler and Lawless over sandwiches for the last number of years.
Sandwich wars.
Sandwich wars. Yeah, you know, it's quite tragic sometimes when the sandwiches turn into wars. You know, when Gary comes in to get the sandwich, what do you think his reaction is going to be?
You know, I didn't...
Speechless. Be speechless, yeah. Yes.
Speechless like I am right now.
Gary is going to be speechless when he sees the sandwich.
Well, I mean, hit it out of the park. This is a home run.
This is a home run. Exactly right. Now, Richard, I have to shift the attention back to you.
I'm happy to...
Since last Saturday, you've had one open spot. Let's recap our playoff teams. We're going to shift the focus back to hockey briefly. but then we'll get back to sandwiches because really that's what we know best.
Drew, you do all the talking because I have to finish the sandwich.
We know
here.
You're a lost cause. We went through
Talk to me more about the types of cheddar.
Okay, we went through our playoff teams on Saturday's show as we went through our season preview show.
Yes,
and in the East, all three of us had the exact same playoff teams: Tampa Bay, Montreal, Detroit, the Islanders, Rangers, Capitals, Penguins, and Blue Jackets. Now, Richard, both Ezzy and I did not have the Winnipeg Jets making the playoffs. As you went through your teams making the playoffs, you had one spot open. You left one of the eight playoff spots open in the Western Conference as you were still wavering. You were contemplating. Have you made a decision if the Winnipeg Jets fill your eighth playoff spot in the Western Conference?
Yeah, I have them making it.
You have them making
it? I do, yeah. And they're going to make it. The only guy in this room thinks they're
going to
make it.
It's true. It's the only guy. You are the only guy. You're on the record now, as I'm going to mark it down in the trusty little spreadsheet here, that WPG make the playoffs,
yes,
in Richard Pollock's prediction. What do you think puts them over the top? You know, why are Ezzy and I the pessimists, and what do you see as the optimistic thing?
I do see the main competitor for that spot, the competitors really being Nashville and San Jose. And San Jose is just a little bit of an unknown right now, and I do like Peter DeBoer, and I've heard good things about Martin Jones, but I don't know a ton about him. Nashville, I think their defense is great, and their goaltending is better than the Jets, but I think the Jets' defense is just as good, and the Jets have better forwards. So I'm going to go based on that, based on the predictability of the offensive production, and then some of the young guys that they're going to infuse. I mean, there's going to be some growing pains here, but I think that the Jets have enough of the balance that they're going to just slip into that. I think they're going to be the eighth seed, but slip into the eighth spot and play the top team, which I think probably be Anaheim again.
So a rematch of this past year's playoffs.
That's what I think. We'll see.
There you have it. Richard Pollock has the Winnipeg Jets making the playoffs. The question that was on the mind of everybody.
What about the sharp cheddar?
A big thank you to our guest today, Shane Knighty, Winnipeg Jets analyst, Jack Edwards, Boston Bruins broadcaster, and Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils analyst. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, of course.
Go buy the sandwich.
The sandwich available starting tomorrow. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, and Keener Jerseys and Royal Sports. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Alex, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.